This is That Other Sports Show. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Mr. Valdez was off gallivanting across the East Coast, the Florida coast, just chilling with all the homies and homegirls out there, just mixing it up, elbowing with all the high types, the high-end guys and gals out there, making that money, making those connections. He took some time off. We took some time off. He's back. He's golden tan, like the sun, his skin. He's looking absolutely amazing, swollen out of control, and all sorts of tan just all over the place. Like he's just, like he belongs on Hollywood right now. He needs his own star. He does. He needs his own star in Hollywood. Or maybe out in Florida. Maybe that's his. That's where he belongs. Who knows? But it looked good on him. But we're back. We got a ton to catch up on, and I guarantee you that we won't catch up on all of it because some of it was really mid. But there are a few things that weren't. A few things stood out. A few things we will talk about post last show and or post this show and pre or past the last show. So we're going to do some catch up. We will. But before I do anything, I need to ask my friend on the other side and introduce him as well. Mr. Jason Valdez, how was your trip, sir?
Dale, Jesse, I'm back from Florida. I am, you are right. I am sun-kissed. I look like MJF with the bronzer. If you want to picture me in a Ritz-Carlton with a robe and slippers on, opening up my curtains at this fine resort where the golf course was designed by Liv. And I look out at the beautiful Orlando sunrise and I see Disney World. That's basically a day in the life of your boy. But I'm back. I'm back from being pampered. I'm back from shaking the hands of millionaires and doing the thing that we do when you're in the corporate world. And I'm back to just being a regular dude like you, Jess, just kicking back, sitting on the couch, dying to talk sports. We just talked off air for 7 minutes about a bunch of stuff that I hope that we get to scratch the surface on. We may not, we shall see. But I want to start here with the question that everybody wants to know, Jess. Is the Twitter sabbatical over? Because you've been off of Twitter for 7 days, 10 days. It's been a while. Is it over or is it going to continue?
It's going to continue for a minute. I'm letting my head clear. I'm trying to get back on track. I feel like I got sucked into the Twitter blue. I had the check mark. Going a little bit crazy. I was like, I was trying to hobnob with some of the other Twitter blue folks and everything.
The elites.
And I think that it all went to my head a little tiny bit.
You stepped away.
And you know what? To be honest, the only thing I miss about Twitter, besides the originals, the OGs that we would discuss and talk with on a daily basis, is just the news updates. Like, mm-hmm. Twitter, for what it's worth, is the greatest source of right now in real life, this is happening. News sources.
Have you tried Reddit yet?
I have not tried Reddit. I hear that Reddit is close.
Reddit was my go-to, probably still is after Twitter, but was my go-to for probably the better part of 2 years when I was kind of phasing out of Twitter for a second. Twitter was more of like, this is my platform just for me to go on and say sporadic random shit. But I thought like the wrestling takes I would get from Reddit Squared Circle were way better. The news updates I would get from Reddit were way better. The local stuff I would get was way better. And it's just a cleaner version of Twitter, and you can really also be selective with the pornography that you want to view, which to me is important.
That's a plus.
Because sometimes I just don't want like butthole stuff right when I wake up. Speaking of waking up, let me share something with all of our listeners here, because I love enlightening our listeners. While I was in Orlando being wined and dined, here's a name drop, Jess. I got to spend some time with Oprah's shaman, if you will, with her guru, with her meditation guy. His advice to everyone was, do not look at your cell phones for the first 30 minutes of the morning. Something that we all love to do is wake up and we just start looking at the internet. We start looking at social media. We start looking at Instagram. We start looking at Twitter. We start looking at Reddit. And maybe we shouldn't do that right when we wake up. Maybe we should wait 30, 45 minutes. Maybe we should get up, brush our teeth, take a shower, maybe work out, listen to some music. You don't have to open up social media apps to put your headphones on and go to your iTunes and go to your SoundCloud or whatever you use to listen to your music. And then maybe 45 minutes, an hour later, after you've gotten to some creative flow, you know, however you may do so, then do a little bit of doom scrolling, then get into whatever you look at. It's not the worst advice, and something that I've been doing before I was given that advice. Because you know me, Jess, I just wake up and go straight to the gym. And then I start looking at stuff. I start doom scrolling after I get out of the sauna. So it takes me about an hour and a half to catch up with everybody. That's when I'm like, oh, this rapper died. That sucks. So Jess, with that said, so I guess I'm plugging the show this week. You send me the links, and then
yes,
I plug
yes.
The show.
You'll get the hiatus will be over shortly. I'm gonna take my time, and I'm gonna, you know, like, I'm letting my mind clear, and I think it's good. Social media is such a
it's such a
pointless use of your day if you allow it to be. If you are specifically looking for things, you can find them. But for a lot of people who have time on their hands, they just, I love the term doom scrolling. That's exactly what it is. You're just staring at a screen and just scrolling through endless amounts of pointless information and comments.
Yeah.
And with it becoming super political these days, it's just another reason that I was, you know, choosing to be like, you know, I'm just going to take a break from this. I don't listen to politics. I don't talk about politics right now. I don't care about who's dating who or who's not dating or who's doing who or who's not doing who. The only thing that I care about the most is just the sports updates and takes, of course, from our good friends that are out there.
Yes.
You know, I will get to that point where I'm like, yeah, you know, I feel mentally healthier than I did before. And then I will jump back on and do my thing, because I think that if used in a healthy manner, Twitter can be an amazing app.
Yes.
The Bird app can be amazing. So,
and I don't think there's anything wrong with sometimes. And I recently did this, where you go, you know what? I initially followed maybe 20, 25 people within the last year, and I'm going to unfollow half of them.
Ooh, yeah, that's a big one.
And it's not anything outside of just the content they're posting doesn't do anything to my creative juices or anything stimuli-wise. Doesn't do anything positive for me. I'd rather, again, read Twitter for, like you said, up-to-the-moment information, sports takes, you know, player A signed here, player B is being rumored to be traded here. That type of stuff, the stuff that you used to enjoy reading Sports Illustrated when you were a kid, and the National and the Washington Post or whatever, however you received your information back then. So, Jess, you're doing the right thing. I will plug the show. I will plug this very show, and I encourage you to stay away for as long as possible. But please just make sure that you tell me how to plug the show so I can make sure it's being plugged directly. Shout out. I'm going to try right now to not be disconnected here, Jess. But I need to shout out our boys right now, our boys, Fat Boy Fadeaway Sports. I highly enjoyed this podcast. I listened to this podcast while I was on the plane. And it's good. It's more of a West Coast, Bay Area type podcast. But shout out them. I believe they are with our brothers, Variety. So yes. Shout out to our brothers, the Variety Sports Network as well. We want to show them love. We haven't forgot about you. The thing is, with Jesse not around and with the podcast at not you being used as much with Jess not around and Jesse's people not around that use it, we can say. It's not getting as much love, but we always love them. So let's shout them out, Jess. Let's get into some combat sports here, Jess. It. We've had a few things happen in the last few weeks. I want to start with a hot button topic here. I just realized, because I asked you before the show started if you were seeing any of this, and I'm realizing you're not seeing any of this because you're not on social media. You're not on Twitter. I just watched some of this Nate Diaz versus Jake Paul press conference. And boy, let me tell you, am I underwhelmed. It's probably the most underwhelming press conference that I've ever watched, Jesse. For some reason, I don't think that they brought anybody in, like outsiders in. Like, they didn't just grab 100 rabid fight fans and go, hey, come in here and just make a bunch of noise. I think they literally just grabbed like 15 people from random fight websites, Twitter handles and whatnot, yes men for different teams, and then just had them out there asking random questions. And it just amounted to bad, underwhelming content. Not pushing me away from the fight per se, as much as it just disinterests me completely. Any thoughts on this, Jess? I know you haven't watched this, so I almost feel bad.
No, it's interesting. This is how big of a fight it is, though. If you turn everything that you just said and you flip it on its back, you said disinteresting, underwhelmed. Like, these are some really big words to use, basically saying that, like, you just really don't have a hand in the pot for this fight. But yet you did come back and say, I still am going to watch the fight. Like, I'm still going to, you know what I mean? And that's the reality of it, is when you have the polarizing characters that these two men are. I mean, Nate Diaz is out there choking out dudes who look like Logan Paul or Jake Paul on the street. You know what I mean? Like, and then you got Jake Paul, who has become a master manipulator of all people's monies. Like, this man can take your money at any point in time. Like, he just throws things together.
Whether it's Bitcoin or a fight or a drink or
his
whatever.
YouTube, he's selling stuff off his YouTube channel still. Like, this man can manipulate you to make money off you one way or the other. And so now we have this fight between two guys who are really heels. I mean, this doesn't even happen in WWE, in AEW, WCW back in the day. Like, it was really tough to put two heels. You generally have to have the hero and the heel. You have to have one or the other. You can't have them both be heels. It's tough. And now we have two of the biggest heels in combat sports. And they have made so much money off of being a heel. And now they're facing off against each other. And I can understand why the press would be, you know, maybe not invited, just in case words were said, you know what I mean? Maybe hands were thrown, people were pushed. Like, and again, Nate Diaz just got done choking some dude out on the street and dropped him on his skull. Like, it's going to be
badly.
It's going to be one of those press conferences where they are going to try to the damage that could possibly be done by one, or if not both of these men, to either each other or somebody else. So that part, I think I understand.
There's the point, Jesse, during this press conference where Nate says, this is amateur hour. This, you guys have done a poor job of putting this on, and this feels like an amateur hour. And Jake Paul's response is, well, your team helped put this together. You're calling your own camp amateur hour. These are your people. Your promotions are helping put this together. Your people invited these people. This is in part you're doing. And it makes me think about how great of a promoter Floyd Mayweather was, where he knew he was always going to be the heel and he had to find that face. usually a Hispanic dude around Cinco de Mayo, to be able to generate enormous paydays. And like you said here, Jess, I think that I agree somewhat with both guys are heel, but I also think that that Paul has his loyal fans that are always going to ride with them. And then the Diaz army is always going to be the Diaz army.
It's true.
But, and the other thing I'm thinking, the other Floyd Mayweather reference I want to make here is I listened to Nate today and he finally starts to sound a little bit incoherent, like Nick did 5 years ago or how he does now. And I say that respectfully, you know, at some point, some fighters begin to sound punch drunk. And I don't know if it's he's just really fucking stoned off some good indica. So maybe that's why he sounds like that, because he doesn't give a fuck. He's getting stoned before he rolls out there. Probably has 500 milligrams of edibles in him as he's sitting up there talking shit. I don't know if he's a little punch drunk just because, again, he's probably 38 or 40 years old now, and he's fought for 20-something years, and part of what's made the Diaz brothers a draw is their toughness, their ability to take a punch and come back and deliver. And within doing that, we've seen it with boxers, you get a little punch drunk when you get older. Or if it's just a combination of both. If it's just he's a little punch drunk, he's a little stunned on edibles and indica, but it didn't come across to me as great. Again,
he's just bored.
You're right.
This also, from what I'm hearing from you, this also makes me realize how great of a promoter Dana White also is.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys that fight in the UFC, some of them are just, like, let's be real, some of them are just stupid.
Dude, it's like, the wash.
They're just brawlers.
But it's the wash, rinse, repeat, all right? It's the wash, rinse, repeat. If you want to look at it from a wide scope, right? They do the same pre-fight shit for X amount of years, where he fills up a building with about 250 or 500 rabid fucking fight fans, and they come out, and fighter A gets on a scale, fighter B gets on a scale, they stand off against each other, and he does it six or seven fights, and then the co-main event, he puts on a 30-second video for each one of them, and they get a few more seconds of standing there, and then there might be some animosity or some heat, which gets the crowd riled up, and it works. It works. It's worked for years.
A very long time.
Very fucking year, 10 years, however long we've been doing this show. It's worked forever. And sometimes it creates that extra bit of buzz. Sometimes you get fights that have no buzz. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, did you see that? This guy did this during the fucking presser. And this guy did this. And now all of a sudden I wasn't so much interested, but now I am. We've seen it. We've seen it happen where two guys started fighting backstage. Dana went back the next day and changed the fucking fights. And all of a sudden, they had two new fights and they were all better. Like we've seen it happen. So it comes down to the promotion, and you gotta have that proper promotion. And Nate, Nate and Jake are both right here. You both gotta. You know, Nate's right, and it sucked, and it was underwhelming, like I've been saying the last 20 minutes. And Jake's right where he goes, well, fuck, your hands are as much on this as mine are. You're part of this promotion too. It's called co-promotion for a reason.
Well, that's the thing is this, like you said, the biggest difference is Dana White, you know, the Vince McMahons of the world, you know, these huge promoters, Floyd Mayweather, I have to just real quick say how great of a job he has done at creating his own promotion and doing such a good job of promoting the people under his promotion. He's just a fighter. And I that's a very underwhelming statement, but I mean, he's just an athlete. And yes, he's a businessman. He's become a businessman over the years. But how many fighters or football players or basketball players or baseball players have tried to do something along the and failed miserably?
A ton of them.
And to be able to do what Floyd's done, to be able to have the longevity of Dana White and what he's done with the UFC And again, just shout out to Vince McMahon, old ass, you know, creepy Vince with that mustache. This man is, he can't kill him. And yes, money is important. They all have money to do the things that they want to do and kind of do it the right way. But to just step off a ledge and say, hey, I'm going to start my own promotion. I'm going to try to get this going. It's super difficult. How many promotions have we seen go down the toilet in a year to 2 years?
Hey, a great promotion isn't always about financial backing. Bottom line, you got to truly have a promoter that promotes. And I say, shout out to our boy, and I know we give him a lot of love on this show, but our boy Jimmy LeChow at 559 Fights and Iridium Sports. You want to talk about a guy that promotes his ass off. That's my man right there.
And so, that shit's been going. He's been having that go forever. And
over 10 years.
Consistent promotion that gets his young fighters, male and female, into these big league scenarios.
Feeder incredible amateurs that at some point feed into, whether it's Itachi Palace, more regional upgrade fights, or right into a Dana White Contenders or something like that. Or
it's happened time and time again.
He's been able, it's a tried and true blueprint that has worked for him and his team for over 10 years. So
to try to promote something, you have to have all the intangibles. You can't have 3 out of 5 or however many, you know, like you have to have 10 out of 10. You have to be able to sell. You have to be able to sell it. You have to be able to get people to buy in and trust you. You have to be able to, once you get the show going, actually prove that it's worthwhile coming back. Like, it's a tough thing to try to promote a show. It's tough.
You need to be a super entrepreneur.
Yes.
That's it. You have to be a super entrepreneur. Jess, let's quickly touch on this past weekend's UFC. You and I mean, it is time to drop the hammer. You and I both thought it was a little bit mama mid. I really want to focus on the two co-main events here. And I tweeted about it. So full transparency, I did fall asleep during both of these fights. I was tired. I had watched Guardians of the Galaxy 3 that day, which was a great movie. I believe the Lakers Warriors also played that day. So I was steamed out. I had nothing left by the time these fights came on. But Jesse, let's start with Bilal Muhammad versus... Did I lose you? You're here. You're still with me.
No, I'm
right?
here. I'm here.
Let's start with Bilal Muhammad and versus the kid whose name is
Gilbert Burns.
Gilbert Burns. Shout out Gilbert Burns for just taking fucking fights while they come up and making money doing it. Prize fighting is prize fighting. My man probably made fucking $2-3 million in the last 6 months. But on the short end of this, short end of the stick on this fight. And the thing with Bilal that I will say, is he's very good at equalizing what you do great and being able to implement what he does well. He's truly good at doing that. Doesn't always equate to exciting fights. As I said, I ended up fucking falling asleep here for about a round and a half. Give me some thoughts on this fight.
Bilal Muhammad is, it's weird because like he's been in the UFC for a grip. Like, I mean, it's not like he's a new guy. You know what I mean? He didn't just come over from another show. Like he's been
up and down.
He's been a staple point in the Ultimate Fighting Championship for years now, and he's had a very successful career. I mean, take a look at the record speaks for itself. He's been very successful. He's just never had, you know, that he's always gotten that to that, you know, top 7, maybe top 9, 10, maybe a little bit outside the top 10. And then he gets that nasty loss that sets him back 2 or 3 spots. And the reason being is in earlier in his career, if you remember, he was not much on the mic. He didn't like to really talk. He wasn't much of a trash talker. He didn't really say anything at all. Like he was just kind of the silent assassin type. And so now in his furthered career, his aged career, if you will, he's begin to, you know, he's sporting the dark sunglasses all the time. He's kind of being a little bit more of a tough guy, which is fine because it's getting him promoted. He's doing a little bit of self-promotion, if you will. There we go. A little self-promotion for Bilal. And it's worked to go along with his fight style, which is, you know, very conducive to this game, the fight game as it is right now. You have to be able to nullify your opponent's strengths And that is what he does. He does a very good job of nullifying his opponent's strengths. That does not equate to very many exciting fights. He's had a few, but it doesn't equate to a lot. This fight against Gilbert Burns, I was expecting it to be a barn burner. Just like somebody was going to sleep somewhere. Gilbert just came off a pretty big win, like maybe last month, fighting short notice. Bilal's a top. He's a top guy now. He's moving up the rankings pretty far. And it was just basically Bilal doing what Bilal does. He just he took away the strikes by shooting for takedowns. He smothered and covered Gilbert as much as possible. Short strikes from the ground. He can strike standing up. He's not terrible, but again, he's not really setting strikes up to knock a guy out. He's setting strikes up for takedowns. Maybe some sneaky kicks here and there. Gilbert Burns looked tired. I watched the fight eventually. Yeah. I got around to it.
I think that's fair. I think fighting three times in the past 6 months, you might be a little bit tired.
He looked tired. He
came for a five-round fight, I believe, or was the Masvidal three-round fight?
That's right. So, I mean, he wasn't gassed. He just kind of got to a point where, you know, he'd been kind of getting beaten up a little bit. And he did gas a little bit quicker than most of his fights. And let's be real, Gilbert Burns has never had a true gas tank on him.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, you just saw Bilal Muhammad steal the soul from his body until the end of the fight, and that's what happened. Not exciting, not flashy, but if you're in the Bilal Muhammad camp, you have to be excited, because after this, you are looking at a top... probably a top seven guy now, like, you know, somewhere in that range, five to seven.
I would say top five.
There's not much left. I mean, you just Burns had a big,
a t- yeah.
You've been fighting for the, guy? Yeah, you've been fighting for the UFC over like you said, three fights over the last 6 months, which is incredible. And now I believe he's won all three of those, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Now you have to. He just took and did you a favor. Taking short notice against a killer. Burns is a killer. He can knock you out. He can submit you. He can do a lot of different things. And he just beat Gilbert Burns, who's coming off a big win himself. I think Dana and that crew up there, Bilal Muhammad, a top, you know, five to
top
seven.
Five. I say you gotta put him in there with the top five guy now. He's not getting no younger. He's finally healthy. And like I said, beating Burns is a big win, short notice fight or not. He's still a top five fighter. If you beat a guy, even if he's top five or six, if you beat a guy in the top five, you just it ain't about jumping the line as much as it is. You got to fight a guy that's a little bit lower now. You got to fight a guy with a little bit more of an increased skill set. And I think Muhammad is in that unique spot now where – we want to see him in these fights. We want to say, okay, well, we know you can beat a Burns now, but can you beat a guy at the top two or three? Can you beat a guy that's going to be able to neutralize your best shit and that's force true. You into a stand-up fight, force you to stand and bang? I'm interested in seeing what happens next. I think Burns should take a little bit of time off here, and maybe Burns is starting to shadow more into those super fights, or maybe I hate to say gatekeeper, because gatekeeper to me is more like you're fighting dudes outside of the top 10, like you're the guy that gets a guy into the top 10. But
I think he's kind of on that level right now.
I think that's a fair assessment too. And if you want to say trending down, you're right. I mean, you ain't getting younger, which means your gas tank ain't going to get any better. But he's always going to have pop in those hands, and he's always going to have that jiu-jitsu to fall back on. You know, but you know, those great wrestlers, for whatever reason, they're able to neutralize it late in the fight.
You know who I would like to see Muhammad go train with for just like 2 months even? If I don't know if he can afford him, but I would love to see him go and train with George St. Pierre.
Can you pull up top five real quick and tell me who's top five in that division? I can't think offhand, because that's 185, right? Or 170. That's 170.
I believe it's the 170 division.
Can you just tell me really quick who? Because I want to see how we would match up if you did give me the top three, four, five dudes there, Right? Because, of course, we're going to do like Usman and Edwards and who else?
So it looks like Leon Edwards is he's ranked one in the division. He's champion. He's Le Champion. They still have Kamaru Usman at two. Kazmat at three. Muhammad, after his win, they got him up at four.
And then he's five.
And then five was originally Gilbert Burns. Then you got Colby Covington, Shavkat Rachmanov. And then,
hey, hold on.
And then a bunch of dudes who don't belong in the top five.
So tell me right now, how do you think he does against Kazmat?
Kazmat beats him.
And then what about Colby?
Colby That's beats him fight. Too.
You think
it
so?
Would be a good That's fight, but I think Colby
That's
wins.
A great fight. That's a great fight.
His Bilal
I want
is,
that fight.
It is a weird situation though, because we're just talking about you have to fight a dude above you now. If he can't, if Burns is done. Colby's coming off that win against Jorge, which was, I believe, like not even recent.
No, it was within the last 6 months,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe you might
so
be right. Maybe
the thing is even Colby though, Colby didn't look good.
Colby is trying to get a championship fight. He's
you know who they gotta have fight Bilal right now? I'm just gonna be honest. You gotta have him fight Shavkat.
I like
gotta
that
have
fight,
him fight
though.
Rachmanov.
I like that. I love that fight. I'm not gonna lie, I love that fight.
If Rachmanov wins, he skyrockets to the top five. And then Bilal will drop, but he can't drop out of the top five, I don't think.
That's just that's just two fucking grapplers, just fucking two gorillas fucking going chest to chest.
Both of those dudes, like, both those dudes have some hands. You know, we've seen each one,
that's
like, knock people
that's
sideways.
That's a nasty grappling fucking fight. Let's see who can pin who on against the cage.
I mean, I love that fight.
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. I'm not going to lie. I'm very much intrigued. Jess, let's get to the main event here. And again, not going to lie, I woke up, watched about a round, maybe two rounds, and then that Sandman was fucking throwing that dust right in my eyes. And next thing I know, I wake up and Marab's in the ring wearing Sugar Shane's coat. I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now? Give me some thoughts on this fight, Jess.
So the fight itself, I thought, was, again, a little underwhelming.
Did you think Triple C won? Because I have not seen one person say that they thought that he won outside of
no, Sterling won the fight. I mean, Sterling kept the pressure on the entire time. So the fight itself was not exciting.
No.
And it's weird because it's funny because both these men are actually very exciting fighters.
But I've seen Sterling put some stinker fights up too that aren't that exciting. I mean, let's keep
so what happened was Sterling was just the busier guy. I mean, he didn't let up. He was constantly throwing stuff. I believe
he stand up fighter. Sterling's a better stand up fighter.
He landed most of the strikes. Cejudo looked like a guy who hasn't fought in a cage in 3 years.
That was my biggest worry with him, Jess, going into this fight, was taking that much time off and then fighting. I know he had a fight a few months ago or whatever, but when you're fighting the best guy in the division and he's a young, hungry cat and you're an older cat, there's a lot of things there that make me go, like, there's a lot of, when I'm checking the list here, where it's like, all right, well, that favors Sterling. That favors
Dominic
Sterling,
Cruz, that or sorry, Henry Cejudo hasn't, he defended his title against Dominic Cruz back in 2020.
That
so literally 3 years to the day that he lost to Sterling. He beat Cruz on May 9th of 2020.
Jesus.
He lost to Sterling May 6th, so a couple days.
That's wild to me. Wow,
that's
3 years. Well,
3 years.
Well, Jess, you can't take 3 years off and then fight the best guy in the division. You can't. You can't. I'm sorry. You can't.
Not that Cejudo didn't look good at times. I mean, he's an athlete. He's an Olympian. He's an athlete.
If he won two rounds, the fact that he was able to take 3 years off, come back 3 years older, and win a round or two from the world champion, who might be at his peak.
He is.
I mean, Sterling, that's fucking impressive. That's something to hang your hat on.
It is. I just want people out there, if you're listening or will be listening to the show, please use your imagination. Whether you like the guy or not, think of if Henry Cejudo never left. We talking about this man in the GOAT status type 100%. Conversations. I don't think anybody in that division beats him, probably for a couple of years. I think he defends his title for a while.
It would have been really unique to see him versus Jan. When Jan was ripping everybody apart, I don't know.
I still give the edge to the problem is it's that Olympic wrestling, man. It just when he is on, he will take you down at any point in time. Jan has no business, like unless Jan could have caught him early, which is a possibility. Obviously, it's fighting two guys in a cage. You know, anything can happen.
5-round fight.
But Cejudo also, during his time as champion, proved to be a very intelligent man.
I agree with you. For the sake of argument, I would say, I don't know if he dominates. I don't know. I would have loved to have seen that fight when Jan was just
it would have been good.
On an absolute fucking tear before the Sterling stuff happened. And then that Sterling-Jan stuff basically went on for 2 years between the injuries and the fucking whatever else was going on. It was just, it took time for those fights to happen. And then now we've seen hindsight 2020 that Sterling ended up being the better fighter in those. So, man, I don't know what, but I'll tell you what. Part of the reason I wanted to get into this, Jess, is we talked about this before we started recording. I want to see Sugar Sean versus Sterling. The UFC has won. The marketing and the promotion has been able to get me like a fish. Hook, line, and sinker. And I wanted, when they were in the ring and they were talking shit and Sugar took his coat off and he's doing his thing, I'm like, all right, I want to see these guys fight. I want to see these guys bang. I think that Sugar could give Sterling some fits and vice versa. I'm not asking you to pick a winner right now, Jess. But off the top of your head, who would you favor in this fight?
Well, if I'm not considering who the champion is, I would have to favor Sugar Sean.
Yeah.
His skill set is just take away the wild hair, take away, the trashy ass shit that he does. And don't forget, like, this man actually, like, he goes around and gives people, like, homeless people money and stuff. So, like, Sugar Sean's not necessarily a trash human being, right? I'm just saying, like, some of the things he says and the personality.
There's no reason to argue that some fighters are going to be douchebags. That's okay.
If you take away who's champion, Sugar Sean's skill set, I think, supersedes Sterling's. And Sterling is literally at the peak of his career. He will be no better than he is right now.
I love this because I think the opposite, and I lean Sterling. And I think that Sterling would be able to give him absolute fits with his grappling. And I think that if Sterling wanted to, he could take him down. And I think that's if he takes him down for 2 or 3 rounds and he gives him fits on the ground, you're neutralizing that nasty stand-up that we know Sean is capable of. Ooh, let me tell you, we're on the opposite spectrums here. Because
you can be Team Sterling and I'll be Team Sugar on this.
We will cross that bridge when we get there, and I hope they don't do like an ultimate fighter and all that. Like, let's just get these guys to fight in 3 months. Stop fucking around.
If I'm a champion and Dana White comes up to me and says, "Hey man, I got this fight lined up, but I want you to be a coach and your opponent to be a coach."
Yeah, of course.
To help spice up. I'd tell him to fuck off.
No, they're like, no. Here's the problem though, Jess. It's the money. It's the money. They're gonna say,
I do not want to wait. If I'm the champion, I don't want to wait.
It's the
I want to fight.
No, those guys want.
But the money is true. That the money talks. Money talks.
Get more money. Hey, so I know you're not on Twitter, so you haven't been able to see this, but Marab versus Triple C. You want to see a little bit of that?
Yeah, why not? That's like Olympic style wrestling versus Dagestanian Olympic style wrestling.
If Marab's never gonna fight Sterling,
yeah,
what the fuck? That seems to me like a no brainer.
Here's the thing, though. The only thing I have, obviously, I'm not really like all caught up completely, but is Triple C legitimately coming back to combat sports, or was this just like, hey man, I'm gonna come back, I'm gonna shoot my shot at the title?
He had at the press conference yesterday, he was fucking fired up because he thought he won that fight. He really thought he won that fight.
He had
a lot of piss and vinegar in his mouth. You could tell he was not happy. He was not happy, and so I think if you dangle a Merab fight in front of him and you tell him, hey, you beat Merab, you get right back in there, you get a rematch with whoever wins between Sean and Sterling. Fucking let's go.
Look, you and I have talked about this division and the divisions underneath it for quite some time. They are the most exciting divisions in the UFC. You can literally throw any two people in, and it's going to be a fucking burner.
Jess, you know, just real quickly, and I don't want to spend more than 5 seconds on this, but I know you've been off the old Twitter. You know, Bones Jones doesn't want to fight our boy, big fucking Volkanovski, or not big fucking. I'm sorry, not Volkanovski, Pavs. You know, he doesn't want to fight Pavlovich.
Why would he not want to fight Pavs? Is because Pavs got fire there. In those money's hands.
Money's not there, and he wants to only fight a legend. He only wants one fucking fight, and that's Stipe. And I think he said there might be one other guy that he might fight, but it was Pavlovich. I swear to you,
I'm gonna say this right now. I understand Jones wanting to go out as champ. No one wants to go out on the downslide. We've seen it happen to the greatest: Liddell, Machida, Shogun, Vanderlei. We've seen it, Fedor. We've seen all the greats go out on the downslide. There's almost no way to stop it. Age is a motherfucker. We've said it 1,000 times on this show.
Father time.
Father time will kick you square in the nuts,
never lost,
spit on your face, and laugh at you as he's walking away. But Jones is different. He is a true prototype of an athlete. And even to this day, what he proved against in his last fight where he won the championship, the heavyweight championship, he proved that he is still somewhat that same prototype. He's just different. He's a hybrid type of human being. If I were him, I would definitely want to go out on top. And by beating a former champion or a legend, go out like Randy Orton, the legend killer. But I'm telling you, like, there's no one out there. Stipe is a terrible matchup in favor for John Jones. Yeah, John Jones destroys Stipe.
Yeah.
It's not even a good fight.
I haven't seen one fucking person say that they think Stipe has a chance in that fight. Just for the sake of argument, I don't see anyone even attempting to fucking take a stab at it. Like, it just is a terrible miss. It's a mismatch. Jess,
you know what you do? You go tell Fedor right now, we give you a one-fight contract in the UFC. You got to come and fight
John Jones.
Well, you give him $5 million. I don't give a shit. You go do that right now. One fight, legend versus legend. John Jones, Fedor Emelianenko for all the cards. Boom, let's do it.
If John Bones Jones wants to cement his legacy and truly be able to say, I am the greatest mixed martial artist of all time, part of the story is, if you would be the final chapter, is there was a young, hungry heavyweight who was in his prime, and his name was, the Pavs. And this was a fight where this is a true heavyweight with knockout power and grappling. And this might be the matchup people look at and go, yeah, you know what? This is the real stylistic fits fight, like we talked about a month ago or 2 months ago, whenever we brought this shit up the last time we discussed this. And that's part of cementing that legacy, is going, yeah, he went in and he beat that fucking guy. He went in, he was the David and that beat the Goliath at heavyweight. He's got, in my opinion, you might be able to say that with Gon. You can't say that with fucking Stipe. You can't. You want to really, truly say,
for God's sake, Stipe's not even a true heavyweight. That guy could cut down to 205 anytime he wanted to. He walks around like 230. Come on.
You've already put yourself on the Mount Rushmore of 205s. You've already put yourself on the Mount Rushmore of the UFC greats. But if you want to set yourself apart and go into that Ric Flair stratosphere where people just go, yeah, but that's the greatest of all time. You got to do, you want to be Hoist Gracie, if you will. You got to fucking do that. You got to take that fight and you got to win that fight. That's where I'm at, Jess. I'm sorry.
No, I agree. I agree with you 100%. And here's the reason why I agree with you so much, because this is the only fight that causes a risk of loss. If you want to be that great champion, if you want to be the greatest of all time, you've been calling yourself that for the past 10 years, then you have to take a fight that's risky. And honestly, if you look back at the fights, even in 205, when was he at risk of losing to any of those guys? I honestly can't look back and say, oh, well, Johnny Walker might have beat him, or, you know, this guy might have beat him, or this guy. No, like, I John Jones was a favorite in every single fight, and he should have been. He was the better fighter. This is a point in time when he can literally carve his own face into another side of that Mount Rushmore of MMA and say, you know what, not only am I the best 205 to ever live, I'm possibly the greatest heavyweight to ever live, and I possibly am the greatest mixed martial artist to ever live. I've done everything. I've fought everyone in two of the biggest divisions, literally the heaviest divisions, and I've not been beaten ever. So, I mean, Pav, he's a risk. He's got heavy hands. He's the younger fighter. He's got a little bit of grappling, and he's just one of those tough ass Ruskies. I hope he's from Russia. I'm not really sure. He's from one of those, like, when he's from, he's from in that region.
You're going the right way.
He's in that region somewhere. He's a tough guy, man. And I think that if you want to really, again, staple yourself on the side of that mountain, you have to take a risky fight and win. And this would be that risky fight. Stipe is not a risk. I know he's got hands. Stipe's got hands for days. I get it. But you know what John Jones is going to do? He's going to do his little quad kick and then take him down. He's going to take him down. He's going to elbow him in the face 13 times. And then Stipe is going to give up, or he's going to turn his back. And then John Jones is going to submit him. And it's going to happen in the first round.
I love it. Yeah, I think, listen, let's keep it moving here. We spent a decent amount of time on these on this card. I wanted to touch just 1 minute here, Jess.
Ooh, 1 minute.
On Davis versus Garcia before.
Oh, yes. Faster. I almost forgot. I mean, we got so hyped about mixed martial arts.
It was a fight that lived up to the hype, if you will. Shout out Garcia for, I think, going out on his shield, because at some point he was biting down on his mouthpiece and tried to trade with Davis. I said that was a terrible idea. I said it would not end well for him if he tried to do that. He did that. It did not end well for him. He took a furious body shot. I see a lot of people on the internet that said he gave up. He was able to get back on.
That's somebody who ain't never been hit in the body.
That's it. That's the answer to that. There's no other way to get around it. There's no other way. Is that people don't understand how debilitating a true body shot is. A body shot is what made me realize after my third or fourth time sparring as a teenager, this ain't it for me. There's tough guys, and then there's me, and I ain't a tough guy. Let me go ahead and roll my ass right up out of this ring, because I can't stand, because I'm in so much pain from getting hit in the goddamn liver. You know, Jess, I don't know how much to say other than I think that Tank is in a unique spot where, if you want to say he's number one pound for pound, I think that's fair. I don't know if I'm ready to say he's the face of boxing, which is what some people want to say. I think we're kind of living in the moment when we do that. Clearly right now, the face of boxing is someone like Tyson Fury. And some people might even say it's like a Deontay Wilder. The heavyweights are always going to rule boxing, period. And I don't see Tank as the face of boxing. And I think another reason is, he's a little bit of a nightmare promotion-wise because of all of the legal baggage that he brings. And he's a little bit of a hothead and a firecracker that gets himself in trouble. And that's why his ass is on house arrest, like, right now. with that said, Jess, give me some thoughts on this. Give me some thoughts on where you think Davis is at right now with regards to the face of boxing, if you will.
So the fight itself, I thought, was fantastic. And it got to a point where Garcia figured out, I can't beat him by juking and jiving and you know, all Garcia's flashier stuff that he can normally kind of like almost just kind of draw somebody's attention in with all the footwork and the flashes. Like, he almost draws their attention in, and then he just counters and he lays into people. Like, Gervonta Davis isn't that type of fighter. Like, he doesn't care what you have. He's going to bull rush you and just push you and push you and push you and push you. Like, he does it every fight. Like, that's the funny thing about Davis, is that he does it every fight. He doesn't really change his stance. He doesn't really change his style for any particular fighter. He's the bull. They're the matador. They need to try to outsmart him, or he's going to come in and crush them. And that's what happened to Ryan Garcia. Garcia is a fantastic fighter. He's a young man. He's got a huge career ahead of himself still. I think that he's still
He's gonna
got
be all right.
he's got lots of potential to be a future champion and win more belts and all sorts of things. But in the moment, Gervonta Davis was just the tougher, stronger bull. And I'll agree with you. Shout out to Garcia and his camp for just somebody made the decision, whether it was him or his camp. Somebody said, "Hey, man, you're losing points bad, you know, and you ain't got nothing for him. So you got to either go out on your shield or lay him out. It's going to be one or the other." And Garcia did. And so big shout out to that's huge mentally for a fighter to just bite down and say, "Fuck it. I'm all in." That's
going
tough
out
mentally.
on my
That's
shield.
tough. That puts you in a whole different bracket of tough when you can just do that. And Garcia did. And I'm telling you, for the people out there, the naysayers, they're like, "Ah, he gave up," or whatever. You let Gervonta Davis hit you in the liver
as hard as he can.
As hard as he can.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens to you.
I'm telling you.
Let's see how many months you are pissing blood.
Yes.
Before you figure it out, like, damn, that really sucks. That hurts
yeah.
a lot.
People, I'm telling you, people don't understand. Like, if you get hit in the face, it just kind of goes away after a few minutes. You get hit in the body, like someone really loads up and just hits you as hard as they can in the body, like that shit, like you will feel that shit for days.
There's a lot of very important organs inside of your body, and if they're
just
being
get bruised,
damaged,
and they're
not
all bruised.
Good.
The motherfuckers are all bruised, and they're like, "Help." So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Tank. I don't know what happens with him next.
I don't even know who he fights next. I mean, I don't even know who you want to match him up with. The smaller weight classes are tough, man. Like you said, the heavyweight division in boxing is always going to catch. It's always going to be the eye catcher. That's just the way it is and always has been. Davis is a tough guy. I don't know who's out there in his division that can beat him. I know that there's multiple fighters that are up and coming and kind of been around a little bit that you can still throw at him, make a few super fights maybe. Like you said, as far as being the face of boxing, I mean, if you were to ask me that, like blindly, just turn around and be like, "Hey, Jesse, who's the face of boxing?" I would say Tyson Fury right off the bat. And that's only because Tyson Fury is, you know, like he's heavyweight champ, man. So I mean,
that's it. I think that right now
when you have a cool
really
ass nickname like the Gypsy King and you're the champion, yeah, you're kind of the face. So
I think there's a reason that when he fights, he's either fighting on pay-per-view or on ESPN primetime Saturday nights. He's internationally an enormous deal. And then after that, probably Canelo, who had a fantastic showing over the weekend too, just got into an absolute fucking fight. That kid he fought was Ryder, I believe was his name.
Ryder.
Game as hell and did the whole, "I'm going to go in and trade with Canelo and see how it ends. I think I'm tough enough." And he got knocked out within 8 rounds or something like that. So shout out Canelo. We'll see what happens with him. And with Tank, I think the Haney fight is the fight I'd want to see next. You're going to get that bull matador again. I think Haney's going to be a little bit more patient. Southpaw, that's an interesting fight. I'd like to see that. But Davis, Tank again. That equalizer punch changes everything, and he would have that advantage in that Haney fight. Jess, let's hit the basketball really quick. And I think we should get out of here after that. I want to do a little bit of Billy Bob really want to hit the basketball right now? Really quick.
We can skip Golden State in LA right now if you really, because
you know what's funny? The last time we did a show, the Warriors were down 2-0 to Sacramento, and I was very doom and gloom. And
do you feel doom and gloom right now?
I'm gonna save that those takes for the.
We're gonna start from the bottom. What we believe is the bottom.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The bottom games. And
bottom
then we'll
games,
move up the ladder. Our ladder
first. The absolute worst. Listen, I understand that the Knicks and the Heat rivalry in the 90s was fantastic and a great. Yeah, everyone loved
Lonzo Mourning, Patrick Ewing.
Go against Ewing and LJ going chest to chest with guys. But those were low-scoring, boring games and very, very mama mid. And that's how these games have been as well. The Knicks don't show up at all. And it seems like the Heat are just the overall better veteran team from top to bottom. And whenever the Knicks start to make runs in these playoff games, the Heat just extinguish them. with Bam baskets, with Jimmy Buckets baskets, with fucking this random white kid that they have on their team. They just have random shooters that just extinguish these runs that the Knicks make. And I don't know if they're just tired. I don't know if Randall's banged up and Brunson's banged up to the point where they're just suffering and that the explosiveness just isn't there. But I can't see any scenario where they extend the series past another game, Jess. Any thoughts on the series?
I thought that the first couple games were super exciting. I think that both teams kind of showed a lot of spunk. I enjoy the fact that the Knicks are even in this spot. I think if you're a New York Knicks fan, you suffered a lot of like really bad years coming off of multiple championship type years, you know, decades ago. And then, you know, through the Ewing era and so on and so forth. And then mediocrity hit. So just to be where you're at right now with this group of players, which I don't think are like, none of these guys are phenomenal, right? I don't believe that any of them are truly stars.
Brunson's
an emerging potential star, but otherwise they have a lot of really nice pieces that have played well together, and that helps a lot. We talk about gelling all the time on the show, and these guys have gelled correctly, and that's what's propelled them into the playoffs. But the Miami Heat are just simply the better talented team from roster top to bottom. On a bad night for Jimmy Buckets, you can still have Tyler Harrow step up. You can have the other kid who I can't, the other white boy, Duncan Robinson. You can have him step up.
Yeah, Duncan Robinson's hurt. It's some other fucking white boy. I'm telling you, I can't remember his name.
How many white boys they have on this team? It's been 10 years worth of white guys.
They're all wing shooters. And they got
Max Strauss. Yes.
They're all wing shooters, and they all get fucking hot, and they all end up scoring 17 points with 4 assists and 4 big rebounds, and they hit 17 of their points, 3 of them are 3-pointers that they hit. They're just weird. And it would not fucking surprise me if they fuck around and come out of the East, just because it reminds me a lot of that bubble Heat team that made it to the East, where they just get you into fucking dogfights, fist fights, ugly basketball games, whatever you want to call them, where nobody's scoring 100. It's 97-94 Heat win.
As far as this series goes, I'm taking the Heat in four. I think that they win tomorrow's game.
I think the Knicks have won. So
it's 3-1 right now, Miami. I think Miami closes the series out tomorrow night.
I agree with you. Next game, next series.
What's the next every game?
We're going to stay in the East here. Philly, the MVP, Embiid, and absolutely weird Harden series versus the Celtics. The Celtics, to me, listen, we started the podcast talking about just being let down. And right now, the Celtics are just letting me down. I really thought that they would have a lot more backbone and just be that team in the East, especially after Milwaukee went down. But their two losses here against Philly both feel like games that got away from them, winnable games late, games that they choked big leads. And you can go ahead and sign me up on that list of people that are not sure about this coach that Boston has. I know he's a Boston guy. I know the players love him. I know he's an in-house guy, but he's just not well-seasoned. And I'm a big, like, use your timeouts because you can't use them when the game ends type of guy. And when you lose a game on one possession at the end of a game, you do not call a timeout. When do you call a timeout? Just to advance the ball and you save the 10 seconds. But also just you got to set up a play, and you've also got to set up an after play. Hey, if you miss this, who's getting a rebound? And if you get a rebound, who are we kicking it out to? And who's fucking rotating? And who's doing this? And who's doing what? And who's fouling? You just got to have a fucking moment to do it. I understand, because I've seen Kerr do it himself. Hey, we're just going with the fluidity of the moment. Fuck the timeout. We're rolling. But it doesn't always work. It really doesn't. Sometimes you just got to call that timeout and just fucking check the temperatures of everybody's butthole. You good? You good? You good? All right, Tatum, clear out. Fucking Brown, pick and roll. This is our move. Marcus Smart, don't shoot. I don't give a fuck how open you are. Like, this, it just seems pretty self-explanatory. But then again, you have these weird games, and then all of a sudden Harden's getting loose, and that fucking Philly crowd's in it. And now you can easily be 3-1 or 4-0 chilling at home, and now you're 2-2, and you're fucking, you know what I mean? Whether you're going back to Boston or not, you're going to have to play another game in Philly. I don't like it. Give me some random thoughts on this one, Jess.
I still think Boston pulls it out. I mean, I still feel that with Milwaukee getting upset, that they're the team to beat in the East. They'll put it together. Their team is just super. I get it. Embiid's had a hell of a year. You know what I mean? Like super, super year, MVP. I still kind of believe that Jokic deserved it, but that is, I don't get a vote That's on fair. The MVP. I don't get a vote That's on fair. The MVP, but I feel like Joker deserved it, another one. Harden has had kind of like this rebirth in the postseason. He's had a couple of games where he's like looked really good, and then a couple games where he's problem. Been super mid.
It's a rebirth of Harden where it's like the old Rockets Harden. Where like
he's just games lost are great. In threes.
Damn, he's an MVP. Oh, damn, he no-showed.
Yeah. But outside of those guys, and Philly's talented, obviously talented basketball team. But I think that the Boston Celtics are the team to beat because of their starting five, the guys that they can put on the court, and then probably the three or four guys that can be inserted into the game when one or two of those guys needs a rest. Like, just depth-wise, they'll put it together. Jason Tatum is not going to lose this series. Jason Tatum is not Kobe Bryant as much as he wants to be. But he's in a far-off realm of Kobe-like status. Mm-hmm. He can score. He's got some swag to his game. And he does not like to lose. And that's one thing that I enjoy about Jason Tatum, is that it seems to me that a lot of younger players in the league, this generation or maybe last generation as well, they don't mind losing. Jason Tatum doesn't like to lose. And I think that that's a warrior mentality thing that is kind of been lost. It's been like a lost art in this sport. And I like the fact that he doesn't like to lose. I don't think that mentality, that Mamba mentality, if you will, is going to kick him through and get them into the Eastern Conference Finals. And I still believe that the Boston Celtics will represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals.
Just to jump off the Celtics here after this take, you and I have talked about the comparisons to Kobe for 3-4 years now. And while I agree, he is that mold, if you will, it's tough because he still makes some of the bonehead decisions that Kobe never would or would just absolutely beat himself up over if he did. Not saying that Tatum's not, just saying that there came that point with Kobe where he really truly was pissing excellence because he was flawless. The mistakes weren't there. And we're waxing poetically, right?
I'm gonna wax poetically on is there's only two players in the league in league history that have made the impact of like on the court that no one else, that everybody wants to replicate. And that's Michael Jordan and that's Kobe Bryant. They're one and two. And really they're just one and one. They're the only ones. The mentality that they had, the drive to win. I mean, Kobe did this. He did similar stuff to his teammates that Michael was doing to his, back in practice, Yeah, I mean, you have to be a killer to be able to continuously win and do the things that Michael and Kobe did time and time and time and time and time again. And yes, having extra players that help, obviously help on the court, the Shaqs and the Pippins and so on and so forth. I get it. But even with those guys on the court, this is why I know that they're great, is because they overshadowed Shaq. Kobe overshadowed Shaq. Jordan overshadowed everybody on Chicago, including that great 97 team, that had the Rodmans and the Pippins and everybody else. Jordan overshadowed everybody. Kobe overshadowed everybody, even with other fantastic, phenomenal all-stars playing alongside of them. Jason Tatum hasn't done that. He's better. He's good. But he's in that rotation. He's got to close the game.
We've reached that peak now, and we did this with Kobe, where it was like he can't do it without Shaq. That was the big Kobe thing for a minute. He can't do it without Shaq. Then he got Gasol, then he got Odom, and then he figured it out. I think with Tatum now, we look at, you know, he was so young in those first few years with the Celtics, even going back to Kyrie, where it's like, they're the team. They're on the cusp. And then they finally get to the finals last year and lose to the Warriors. And so I think that it was like, okay, this is it. This is their true year. They've seen it all. They've done it all. They're incredibly battle tested. They're as well seasoned as it gets. This, in my opinion, Smart, Brown, and Tatum know each other just as well as Draymond, Clay, and Steph. Like, we've reached that level. But you've got to punch it in. You've got to fucking punch it in now. Otherwise,
next year, I guarantee, especially if they don't get out of the Eastern Conference. Say they lose this series.
There's no more Danny Ainge there to protect it.
No, there's no more Danny Ainge to protect this team. This team is blown up. There's players going off. There's players getting traded. This Boston Celtics team looks a whole lot different next season if they can't get it done.
Jaylen Brown's been traded 27 times in the past 5 years. All right.
We're in the prettier games now, so what's the prettier games?
I know we're going long, but I do want to say this. If you want to talk about a fucking series that has got me horned, and if you want to talk about a series that I think is just as good, if not better, than Warriors-Lakers, it's Denver-Phoenix. This series has everything, Jess. High scoring, instant offense, drama, injuries that are making the series more interesting, MVP level performances every night from somebody. Every question we've asked about Denver is being answered. Every question we've asked about Phoenix is being answered. It's proof in the pudding. It's not, dude. Check the tape. I have the receipts. It's all there. And in my opinion, I've watched every fucking minute of this series. I love this series, Jess. I still don't. I'm so sold on this could be the year Denver wins a championship, because like we've talked about so many years on this show, they finally have a healthy Michael Porter Jr. They finally have a healthy Jamal Murray. They finally have a healthy bench. Fucking Kadarius Pope is playing out of his mind. K fucking, I forgot what his initials are again. What is it?
KBP.
Yeah, is playing fucking well. With the absolute exposure of Phoenix, which is if Booker and KD do not score over 70 combined, they are going to lose. They have to find a way to fucking score 70, whether it's 35 each, whether it's Book gets 40 and KD gets 30, they have to fucking find a way. They had the other, and every one of their games tells a different story, which is much like the Lakers-Warriors series, where it seems to me every game tells a different story, where it's like, it's tough for me to say there's a definitive better team here, because there are those nights where, and we saw it the other night, Jokic goes for like 50 or whatever the fuck he scored the other night. It was like 48, 11 dimes, 7 rebounds, and it just wasn't enough. And he just looks so fucking tired. I'm looking at this guy, and he just looks so fucking tired. And to me, it's not like, well, he's out of shape as much as it is, they're just pushing that motherfucker to the limit. He is a Breeders' Cup level horse that is just being whipped on his ass as they're down the stretch. There are plays in these last 3 minutes where he is touching the ball every fucking play, and they're clearing out for him. And I'm like, No, don't clear out for him. Murray, you got to step up here. Porter, you got to step up here. Someone else has to fucking step up here because my man is gassed. Like, he's fucking tired. He shot 27 times and there's still four possessions left in this game, dog. Like, what are we doing? It is, again, Jess, it is just sex, basketball sexo to me. And I can spend another 20 minutes talking about it, but I want to let you jump in here for a moment.
I don't think I can say anything better than what you just said. This series has been really good. It's been really good. Matter of fact, I'm going over to a buddy's house tonight to watch game five. So, you know, and I do think that, again, Denver, I swear, Denver is like the most deserving franchise of a championship right now. Like, or maybe like the last 3 years. Jokic has just played out of his mind. He's won multiple MVPs. Like, some would debate that he possibly should have won this year's MVP. Me being one of those people. And then watching this last game, game four, that they lost, Jokic was like, I mean, the refs were like, you know what? We're just going to let Phoenix just beat the shit out of him because we want, you know, we want this to be a close series. We don't want Denver going up 3-1. You know, and like there's a point when I believe it was Cameron Payne. Jokic is a big, tall guy, and Cameron Payne's not that big and tall, you know. Yeah. But like to elbow Jokic in the nuts, like, I mean, he just like squared up, raised it's, up, and just
it's an incredibly physical game.
And you know what? That's the smart thing for Phoenix to do, though. If you are going to beat Denver, you need to be super uber physical with the Joker, because no, he is not, you know, he is not a gladiator. You know, he's not, you know, he's not winning any, you know, cardio events. If you can beat him up for the length of the game and at the end of the game, when you need him most, make him the most tired. That is the smart play. And I think that they've been doing that. And the refs have been letting both ends of the court get, you know, fairly physical with each other. It's been a pretty physical matchup so far. But when you, the only way to stop Jokic from being Jokic is to just wear him the fuck out. And Jay, I agree, he is worn out. I don't know how he's going to be for game five. It seems like he gets a quarter less each game. Like, first couple games, he's in it for the full game. Game three is a little bit more tired. Game four, fourth quarter, he was dead. He was dead.
And he's still, but he's still scoring.
And he's still scoring because, again, like, I don't think that, you know, being American fans, we don't sometimes appreciate as much the European and so on, you know, the international players as much as we do our own homegrown boys and girls, right? So Jokic is just one of those guys who, you know, he has that champion mentality. He doesn't want to lose. He's tired. He's dead. He's breathing out of his ears. Like, the guy can't take two steps walking to the bench on a timeout. But then game time, he's just steamrolling dudes. He's doing pick and rolls still. He's, you know, he's still, if he's got to take a jumper, he's taking jumpers. Like, he's taking the hard shots. And he knows that he's going to be the one that they're focusing those hard shots on. And he's taking them all, whether they get called or not. And another thing about Jokic is a lot of people in the past couple of years have said he's been kind of a complainer. He's not necessarily complaining about the shots. He's just taking them. You know what I mean? Like, his, maybe some of his teammates are like, whoa, ref, what's up, man? Like, my boy just got hit right in the gut. Like, you just let it happen. But Jokic is a warrior, man. He just gets back up and he goes right down the court. And then he breathes heavy when it's timeout called.
Hey, again, the guy, I mean, I don't know if he finally put that vape down or not, but my guy is fucking exhausted at the end of these games, and rightfully so. I still think the Nuggets find a way to fuck around and win this in seven games, but just, you know, you got to give KD and Booker their props here on the way out, because, you know, Booker has a little bit of a diva label, and KD has a man has worn many labels, but there are just moments in these games where you're just like, these are two of the best shooters in the world, and you cannot fucking stop them. But KD's not having that. I don't know. There's games that I look at KD and I'm just like,
KD hasn't had the greatest series.
I don't see. This is gonna sound like criticism, but I don't see Warriors KD.
No,
I don't see the KD that just to me was just like, yeah, that guy's the best player on the planet. And maybe because it's been 5 or 6 years, maybe it's because it's been a handful of injuries to his lower legs. But I just, I don't know. That, and again, he's putting up 35, 40 points. There's still, you know, he can still fill it up. But Book's the guy. Book's the fucking guy. Jess, let's spend a few more moments here because we're going long, and I appreciate you going long. It's been a while since we've done an hour plus show. But we're going to finish strong here with Warriors, with Lakers. I am a little bit pessimistic. I am a little bit heartbroken. Yesterday, my energy started to get – like, I got real pessimistic around noon. I was like, you know what? I don't know if I love our chances tonight. We've got to hit baskets. We've got to hope that we don't get that AD game. We've got to hope we don't have an enormous free throw discrepancy here. We got to have a few things roll our way here. You know, even though I thought prior this was an even series with even the Warriors a little bit better, the Lakers have proven me wrong. I just haven't seen enough Lakers games, or this version of the Lakers, if you will. But it's not even that they're deep, Jess. It's just AD is absolutely phenomenal. This is the AD that we all thought would coming out of Kentucky could be that guy. LeBron plays off of him very, very well. And they just play fucking really good defense. It's not even about like the Warriors missing a lot of shots, because they're missing shots. But they're also being very well defended. And it's a weird ebb and flow to me. I look at last night's game and I think about, this is a chance. You got to go 2-2 here and you got to make this an even series. Going down 3-1 to a team that has veteran closers like LeBron James just feels like an impossible feat to me. And I understand people are going to say, well, it is the Warriors, and you can never count out LeBron. You can never count out Steph. You can never count out Coach Kerr. But I think the deficiencies that they were able to get away with in years past, they can no longer get away with. The bad turnovers, the sloppy handles, the sloppy, the lack of rebounding when you need to. You know, there was a reason that Dub's Twitter was going nuts over these loony games. And it's because we haven't had games from anybody like that in a very long time, since last year's finals. So, you know, he's been nullified. And, you know, it's because of the strategies, which I understand. And going back to what I talked about with the Nuggets Suns, this has been very much a chess match where Ham will put out a lineup and the Warriors will go, okay, here's our smaller lineup to combat that. And then Ham combats that, the chess moves where he'll bring out someone like the kid last night who basically outscores the Warriors in the fourth quarter. Is it Lonnie? I can't remember his fucking kid's name. And it's one of those things where you go, all right, well, what are you going to do? You can't have a Steph performance like that and be on the losing end. I understand the Warriors are probably going to get a few whistles at home tomorrow night, and the crowd's going to be fired up, and the role players that don't play well on the road are going to play well at home. You're going to get the great DiVincenzo game. You'll probably get a great pool game. He's been non-existent when it matters, though. But the Warriors have truly had two games get away from them. And in a series like this, when the teams are pretty evenly matched, you can't have two games get away from you. You know, you have the game one where Poole misses the big three at the end. And you have last night's game where you just have almost like an absolute clusterfuck of possessions the last, you know, the home stretch, where Clay misses two big threes that are clearly rushed and are well defended. And Steph misses a deep step back over AD, which goes in and out, right? And I get Warriors fans, we're going to live with those shots. It's truly a live or die by the three team. And now we're dying by the three, which is upsetting knowing how well they played in that first half, just bringing AD out and getting to the basket. Their basket to assist ratio was so insane. And then the Lakers defensively make them go away from that. And they end up losing an enormous Steph game. And I'm telling you, Jess, this reminds me so much of the Suns-Bulls in the 90s finals, where Barkley goes for like 50 and they lose in overtime. And that was it. And Barkley literally will tell you to this day, yeah, man, that was my best shot, and they took it, and they fucking won, and that was it for us. We had nothing. That's how I feel the Warriors are going to be playing tomorrow night. I think you can't lose that Steph game where he plays that special, and you just have a fucking – just a series of errors. I'm putting my hand on my head as I say this. A series of errors that end up losing you an enormous playoff game.
It's tough. It's I honestly didn't think this much of the Lakers coming into the playoffs, the plan. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of them very much when they got in. I thought that the Warriors were an aging veteran team, but nothing that they couldn't handle, you know, with this Lakers squad. This Lakers squad, really, if you look back in the last like 3 months of the regular season or so, that's when they went and got D'Angelo Russell. They went and picked up a couple other role guys. Hachimura. And those last minute deals have really paid huge dividends in the playoffs. Because each of the players that they've brought in, including the little white boy that they have out there,
that kid Reeves, and you know, I always tell the joke. I've been telling the joke. They've got to have that signature white boy on every fucking team, or that signature Hispanic on every team.
Austin Reeves, man,
this guy has been in between Clay's ears like you would not believe.
I mean, the players that they gathered up just all kind of came together a lot faster than normal teams gel when they kind of go on a spending spree or a trading spree.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And I think that the biggest reason for that is because you don't just have a bunch of youngsters on your team like Boston. Both those guys, they've been in the league for a long time, but they're all like under the age of 30 because they all got drafted when they're like 18. You know what I mean? So it's different. This Lakers team's got LeBron. They got, you know, like AD. They got all these other veterans that have kind of like they grab these younger kids by the ear and say, hey, man, this is how we're going to do things. You're going to listen to us. You're going to play like we want you to play. And, you know, if you do what we say to do and you do it properly, we're going to go, you know, we can go pretty far. And that's what this team has done. They've ran all these youngsters through LeBron and AD and so on and so forth. And now the momentum is high in LA. LeBron looks like a 40-year-old man playing basketball. Like, does he have spurts of like young LeBron? Sure, of course. He's still an athlete. He's still like an amazing player. But most of the time, he looks like a 40-year-old man playing basketball. AD is he's the key. If AD stays healthy and he plays out of his mind, he's grabbing 15 boards, putting 30 points up or whatever, you know, blocking four shots, then what happens is that he is the game changer. I believe that this Lakers team goes as far as AD goes, one injury away from being eliminated. If AD stays healthy and he plays, I think that they have I think right now the momentum is definitely on LA's side. Although the Warriors have shown great plays, just some of their younger guys are just really, hate to say it to you, my man, but they're really fucking things up in Golden State.
No,
Jordan Poole, like you said, Jordan Poole's had shots and he don't make them. Right. He can play outside of the ears, but when you get in between the ears, right, you're that's that mental part of the game where you got to be strong. He just hasn't shown that he's got a will to make those plays happen.
I think let me say this, Jess, yeah. The four young players that helped us win the finals last year, Wiggins, Poole, Kuminga and Moody, if you will. I mean, Moody did nothing last year, and it seems like he's the best of the four as of right now.
Yeah.
You're not getting, I mean, they're leaving Wiggins wide open and he's missing threes. Poole is so bad right now. He's a liability on, he's always been a liability on defense, but when he's, if he can't fill up, you know, we'll give you 20 points on the other end, then he's just, he's bad. Kuminga has not played a goddamn minute outside of garbage time. And
which shows Murphy, that there's a lack of trust for him being on the court. Otherwise, Kerr would have him on the court.
A lot. There's a lot of lack of trust there. And now Moody is getting all the playing time, which to me is just mind fucking blowing. Because if you would have told me at the beginning of the year, hey, Kuminga is going to be sitting on the bench here deep in the playoffs while Moody's getting all the reps, I wouldn't have believed it. So it's. You are right, Jess. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No. What you're saying is basically what I was saying. Just the young guys are not playing up to par, and that is the reason that they beat the Celtics in the finals. What was it, last year? The reason being is that the young guys stepped up and played. Now you don't have that same play. The intensity is not there. Your main guys, your Steph, your Clay, your Draymond. Yeah, those guys are playing intense basketball. They're trying to uphold this team, this franchise, and go for at least a potential one last run, right? Well, if you don't get the role players, the young kids, to step up and put their young legs into action, it's not going to happen. And the Lakers are definitely built the second half of the season to be more of a defensive team first. And they're showing that now against Golden State. Hands in the faces, hands on hips. Like you said, Austin Reeves inside the ear of the players and just draining the Golden State Warriors mentally and physically on the court, not letting them get into those flows where Steph's hitting, you know, 30-foot jumpers and like Clay's hitting stuff blindsided out of the corner. Like, if there's no flow to Golden State's game, it's very difficult for them to get the ball because they don't really move the ball incredibly well. They move it to create shots on the outside.
Yeah, the fluidity is there, but outside of they're looking for the 3-point shots, they gotta play ISO.
And I will say this: if Golden State, if they were to have been smart, they should have chased down a guy like Hachimura, because he would have been a great fit in that lineup. A guy who can drive the ball, hit a mid-range jumper, play a little defense, and rebound a little bit as well. They need that type of player. They don't have that type of player right now. Draymond, I love Draymond Green, regardless of all of the antics. But damn it, you have to have that guy who's willing to drive to the basket each and every single time he's got the ball. And Golden State just doesn't have that guy.
Listen, Jess, we're beating a dead horse. I think it's time to hit the wrap it up. I'm becoming more and more depressed. My energy was high when
I'm sorry.
And now I'm going to take a nap.
That's how it goes. The life of
crying myself to a nap.
The life of a sports fan.
Yes,
you're either really high or you're really low.
There's no middle ground, ladies and gentlemen, on that other sports show. We're either flying high or we're dragging through the mud.
Well, if again, I think that Golden State, I picked them to get past this series anyway. I think I picked them to win the West, actually. Okay, I can't remember now. Maybe it was either them or Denver. I definitely had Milwaukee, and that didn't pan out. I think that Golden State still has more opportunity to win this series than LA.
Really?
LA has the momentum, but Golden State has the depth on the bench, and all it's going to take is a game or two put together well by Steve Kerr, just getting these guys fired up. And LA will not have the depth to continue scoring, whereas if Golden State is scoring consistently and they have, you know, Kuminga coming in and they have Poole coming in and they have Looney coming in and they have some of these other guys coming in and putting 10, 15 points up, even just 10, 15 points, I think that Golden State should have the edge.
I think it's an absolute wrap. I think that the Warriors, again, I said it earlier, they'll get some home cooking at home. They'll get some guys lighted up from home. And at some point, the Warriors will probably go up about 15 points, and the Lakers will go, let's go ahead. Let's fucking fall back. Let's pull the soldiers here because we got a big game six at home that we absolutely need to win. And I think that's where the Warriors get throttled, is at game six at on the road.
Nasty.
Well, hit the wrap it up button. Shout out Variety Sports Network. We love you.
Yes. At Variety underscore sports underscore Variety Sports Network. That's where we are helmed through. Just one of the many partners that we have outside of many other Twitter users that help push our show. Thank you to everyone who does that. Thank you to everyone who listens. And while you're on Variety Sports Network, if you're over on their Twitter handle, please go through and look at their list of other sports podcasts. I believe they even have some wrestling ones now. They kind of have a real hodgepodge of sports going on. Hockey stuff, baseball stuff, soccer, basketball, football. You can literally pick anything out of there, including our show, if you come across it, which hopefully you will. Shout out to all the listeners, present, past, and future. We adore you all, and we thank you all for putting up with our antics for the past like 10, 12 years or however long it's been. And you can follow us on Twitter. Well, me, not right now, but eventually, probably. You can follow Jason on Twitter at Valdez spelled backwards 559. And my handle doesn't matter right now, so I'm not going to give it to you. But you can listen to me on the podcast, and yes, that's cool. I appreciate that. You can listen to my my well-tuned voice on the podcast. And then, I don't think that there's anybody else. So while you're out there, just know that the summer is on its way somewhere here in the United States. Eventually, it's going to get really nice. Go out there this weekend, do a little outdoor activity type stuff, and enjoy yourself. Get some fresh air. Get away from social media. Get away from the TV, unless a really good game's on. And go enjoy some outdoor activities, guys.
That's it. Peace, God.